Welcome to Divorce Talk, a podcast for people who are contemplating divorce, going through one, or would like to know everything about the divorce process. Each episode, you'll hear from Chicago divorce lawyers from Bierman LLP, one of the largest divorce and family law firms in the state of Illinois, speak on all things divorce, from child custody, divorce litigation, mediation, the collaborative process, and everything in between. Now, here are your hosts, the Bierman Divorce Lawyers.
Hi, I'm Sandra Napoli-Diargo. I'm here today with Beth McCormick and Katie Michelson, divorce and family law partners at Bierman. Today, we're speaking about the various roles for attorneys appointed for children and how best to work with them in a domestic relations case. But before we get started, I'd like to turn it over to Beth and Katie for them to share a little bit more about themselves.
Hello. So I am a family law partner here at Bierman, and in that role, I often act as an attorney for the parties, the man, the woman, but I also fill a role as a child representative or GAL, which we'll talk to more today. I've practiced for 28 years, and throughout those years of practice, I've gained a lot of wisdom by the practice of law. So it's a pleasure to be here with Katie, where we can help everyone better understand these roles.
Yes, and I work with Beth on many of my cases. I take on a little bit of a different role. I do more litigation, also attorney-assisted mediation, but I represent both parties, men, women, either side. And I really try to find solutions that fit for my clients. So whether that be in mediation or whether that be in litigation, I too am a partner here, and I've spent my entire career at Bierman. And so this is what I do day in and day out, and happy to be here.
So Beth, why don't we get started and let's just give everyone an idea of why someone may need to appoint an attorney for their child.
So if a couple is unable to figure out their conflict in ADR setting, which is alternative dispute resolution, they have to go to court and the court has to make a decision. The court very rarely speaks to children directly. So a lot of times the role of an attorney for the child or a GAL or a child's representative is to be the eyes and the ears of the court. And we're going to spend a little bit of time today distinguishing those roles and helping everyone try to better understand each. Katie and I were just talking prior to our start that many lawyers don't know the difference. Some judges don't know the difference. So it's a really important distinction with big, big differences. And the idea being that the parents couldn't figure out the solution, so they have another person come in only for the children, not for mom, not for dad, just for the kids to weigh in various ways in helping them solve the conflict.
So, Katie, what are the different attorneys that a child may have in a case?
So we're very much driven by our statute. So our statute, the Illinois Marriage and Dissolution of Marriage Act, has a section where it delineates between the three roles. So the court is supposed to identify an attorney for the child in its correct role based upon what needs to be done. So there are three roles that can be assigned by a judge. One is attorney for the child, two is a guardian ad litem, and three is a child representative. The most uncommon is the attorney for the child. That really is reserved for an older child and a child who essentially needs to have an attorney-client relationship with an attorney but is not yet old enough and is not a party to the case. So that a child really has a similar relationship that we have with our clients. The relationship is confidential, it's protected by privilege, and that individual acts in just the same role as we do when we represent parties and conveying a position on behalf of the child, because as Beth mentioned, children are not really going into court and speaking to the judges directly.
So the big difference on that role that's pretty unique, and as an attorney for the child, I have to argue what they want. I'm not looking at their best interest. That's another role we're going to talk about in a minute. But as an attorney for the child, I have to just advocate what they want. We've had cases where I'm an attorney for the child and there's a GAL for the child, where that's two different people filling two very different roles. We don't want to get bogged down in this because it's pretty unique, but it's super important that we introduce the concept of best interests of the children and where that comes in. So I love that you started with attorney for the child because it's the most rare and we don't want to spend too much time there.
Right. So the attorney for the child is one area. Then the more common areas is the guardian ad litem or a child representative. And the roles are very different. The roles they play in court are very different. And what they're going to be doing is very different. So both are going to be and have the children as their clients. But the difference is that a guardian ad litem is more opining on the best interest of the child. They take on a role that's more of almost like the court's eyes and ears. So what they're doing is they're doing an investigation, and they're actually obligated pursuant to statute to actually prepare a report and be able to testify or at least submit that report to all the attorneys that are representing the parties. The guardian ad litem is generally, because it's a best interest standard and is has this kind of overarching best interest view that they're supposed to be taking, is more common with children that are younger. Those who can't enunciate on their own what specifically their feelings are. And a guardian ad litem, though, is not there to, as Beth had mentioned, where an attorney for the child really advocates and says what their client's desire is, not in a best interest standpoint. They're looking and saying, I'm going to determine what I believe based upon precedent, experience, what would be in the best interest of the child and of the family.
I'll just say, I have been GAL for an infant, a newborn. So just to make it really clear as far as what information you take in from the actual children, which made me think it's important for everyone to know, when we are trained in this role, kind of number one rule is you never put a child in the position of telling us what they want, because inevitably, right, the parents are going to posture and say what they think they want them to say. So we are very careful never to do that, no matter what our role is. I think it's really important for anyone listening to make sure that they understand no professional who knows what they're doing is ever going to ask a child, where do you want to live? How much time do you want with mom? How much time do you want with dad? We get those answers in a roundabout way.
Yeah. And a good child representative or guardian ad litem can tell if a child has been coached. Generally, they're not just attorneys. They're individuals who've had a lot of experience with a lot of variety of children, parties. And so they can tell. I've often gotten questions of, what if my spouse or soon to be ex-spouse is a real charmer? And what if they've been able to, you know, charm the kids into saying that? And that is the importance of getting somebody who's very experienced, who isn't swayed by a child or by the other party to make a decision that's going to be in their best interest.
That leads into my next question. Do I get to select what type of attorney is selected for my child? And then do I interview them or are they just appointed?
That's a great question. One of the things that we really try to help our clients see is we have a very specific way of designating this role. And as an attorney for the adults, we are navigating that with our opposing counsel, trying to be very strategic in the right person, everything from gender to location, who the judge is. There's many factors to consider. I have had it thrust upon me as an attorney for a litigant where the judge says, no, this is what we're going to have. You don't have discretion. Most often, though, judges want to hear from the lawyers. Did you guys figure out who you think is the right fit? Because reminder, judge doesn't know anything of the case at that stage very often, or they certainly don't know the nuances that we as practitioners know.
Right. How does communication occur in my conversations with my child's attorney privileged?
They're not. So you have to be careful. And that's why it's really important when you are represented by an attorney to actually be prepped by your own attorney in terms of being advised of that. And also knowing that everything that you are saying, the other side could also know. So you cannot use a guardian ad litem, a child rep, which we didn't really talk about the child rep because the child rep is the third type of attorney for a child. But quickly getting away from that is that we need to tell our clients that nothing is privileged. So that individual also is not the judge. So to try and be posturing towards the child representative or a guardian ad litem, it's really a pointless exercise. And I do think that, again, a well-trained guardian ad litem or child rep can see when a parent is posturing. They can see how an individual might be making things look better than they are or worse for the other side than they are.
So to that end, here at Bierman, we're really sophisticated, I think, in our approach on how to prepare these clients for that. So sometimes, because I represent adults and children, I'll come into a meeting with anyone in the firm and prep the client for that. Prep the client for what you're looking for as a neutral, trying to determine what's in a child's best interest, for example. Most trained professionals can see through BS. So you really have to help that client understand those nuances. I love that you brought up the slick parent. Inevitably, you have, I'll try to be gender neutral and go back and forth, but inevitably, you have a man who comes in and says, my wife's going to come across this way. Mm-hmm. That's not who she is. At home, she's A, B, and C. But in here, I know how she's going to talk. I know what she's going to tell you, da, 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 da. As the person taking it in, you're listening to everybody. A good person, whomever's in this role, is not ever going to let anyone know which way they're going at that stage, similar to a judge. But it's important for anyone, if your lawyer has not prepped you before a meeting with anyone in this role, ask for that prep.
Yes.
Because how many times have we had situations where once you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube, once the damage is done and you come across a certain way, which one of the concerns is looking prepared, over-prepared. You need to be genuine in the face of all of it. I feel like we have to go back to the role of the child's rep.
Yeah, so just really briefly, a child representative is a third type of individual that can be representing your child. A child representative is obviously not going to be doing a best interest. They're more listening to a child, but they're advocating more so for a child. While no child guardian ad litem should be taking advice from a child, it becomes more important as a child gets older. So what their desires and wishes are more important. But they're an attorney. So like a guardian ad litem who might be put on almost as a quasi-party, examined at trial, or prepare, you know, might testify about their role, a child representative is different. And that individual participates in the litigation. You know, a child representative can sometimes be, and actually even a guardian ad litem, somewhat of a mediator. I know what your favorite expression is a mediator with teeth. It's one of those situations where, because they're so intimately connected with the child, and that could be the role ultimately that they need to take, is that kind of be able to sit and be the intermediary, but have a little bit more influence.
Because ultimately, if they don't arrive at the decision between themselves, that child's representative will be telling the court what he or she thinks. I like to say, building on what you said, the child's rep is the hybrid. Okay. So you are looking at the best interest while looking at advocating for the child, trying to find that spot right in between. It's a super challenging role because you are a lawyer. People forget that as a lawyer, I get to file documents on behalf of my clients. Sometimes anecdotes are helpful. I represented a little guy whose hair was down to here, and it seems a little like, what? Well, he wanted, needed his haircut. Like, are you kidding me? That's how granular some of these cases can get. The answer is yes. A good child representative would, you don't take that lightly. You don't run into court on everything. But it's important for everyone to know that that role can actually go to court and deal with some of those details that you might not think about.
How often will I be able to communicate with my child's attorney?
It's an interesting question because you're always able to. So there's a difference between how often can I and how often should I? I mean, that's really the big, you know, and us as attorneys, we need to school our clients on what's appropriate contact with a child rep, guardian ad litem. Because I think, as Beth alluded to before, you don't want to overwhelm a child rep or guardian ad litem. And you also want to bring them in your corner, right? So you're wanting to build a relationship where you're providing information where requested, providing relevant information, but not changing the impression of you due to over-providing information. So what I like to do is I like to talk to my client and say, before you're going to reach out to the child rep, before you're going to reach out to the guardian ad litem, let's talk about it. A lot of times people immediately run to their guardian ad litem and child rep, and then it starts to build on an image of the hysterical parent or somebody who needs a lot of hand-holding.
Something to prove.
And it's in addition to the fact that it's time-consuming and it's another attorney that's actually charging. Because remember, just as we've talked about, it's another individual in the litigation. So they charge as well. So you've got a third professional who's charging to read your emails or to have phone conversations with you. So from both a strategy standpoint, you want to keep people in your camp. But also from a logistical standpoint, you maybe not should be communicating everything to your child, especially as I've mentioned before, nothing is privileged. So, you know, my recommendation is if my client has an issue, come to me first. We can talk about it. Maybe I'll suggest that we reach out together to the child representative. But just because there's another professional available doesn't mean that professional is available at all hours of the day.
If you hear nothing today, hear that you should not have contact with this person without your attorney helping you see it. So part of the preparation is what adds to credibility is how detailed is all the data. So if you're going to sit and for 3 hours tell me everything that you think I need to know about your child and why that child needs to be with you more, et cetera, you know, I'm human. The judge is human. We can only take in so much data. So preparing your case, whether that's in a binder form, whether, you know, you want to give me doctor's reports, school reports, all the data that you want, it needs to be dialed down to a nice, concise summary with proof. And it should be very thoughtful in each word rather than just calling a lot, because that's the first way to, you might give pause and think, what do you have to prove? The truth's going to come out. So you want to make sure that you're not coming across that way.
So we've covered how I will communicate with my child's attorney, but how do the attorneys communicate with one another? How do they work together for, you know, the best interest of the child? And I guess, you know, most people watching this, they want it in the best interest of themselves too, right? For all the various reasons you spoke about.
I think it's a great question. As the child's rep, I ask for telephone calls pretty frequently and say, attorneys, we have court in 3 days. Let's hop on a call. What can we figure out? The judge, you're working on his or her behalf. So what issues have we narrowed it down to? If I can at least get a consensus from the lawyers, again, it's ambitious, but at least the judge is going to see that I'm doing my very best. So the phone calls prior to court, some it's just you go to court and you show up and you hear it there. So what are your experiences?
You know, and I think the most effective is most child rep, guardian ad litem, they'll prefer to have everybody kind of on the same page. So having, you know, us as attorneys, it's really not proper for us to be having side conversations with a guardian ad litem or child rep because it puts them in a very difficult position. Because remember, their client is the child. And again, if they're feeling swayed by either side, they somewhat lose a little bit of neutrality between the parents. I mean, they're not representing either of the parents so that they can be pulled in either direction. So I think having that conversation with both attorneys present, it's a better practice. And I think a guardian ad litem or child prefers that.
Really important, just one last thing, to note that this is all about Illinois. So for anyone else who's listening, this is how it works in Illinois. And super important, in practice, we're talking to you from the standpoint of the Chicagoland area and the collar counties, et cetera. All throughout the state of Illinois, every jurisdiction does it differently. So I really wanted to make sure we gave that perspective for any listeners.
Thank you. Katie, is there any last words you'd like to include?
No, just that I think everybody's got an important role in domestic relations cases are extremely contentious. They can be. And I think everyone has a role and everybody can work together. And it's not just about the best interest of the children. It really is about the best interest of the family. And I think that by having the right people to assist with both the parties and the children, I think that litigation can be a lot smoother if it needs to go there.
Well, thank you. This has been so valuable. We're out of time. If you'd like to learn more about Beth or Katie, please visit the website at www.biermanlaw.com. Follow us on Facebook and LinkedIn. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Divorce Talk. Visit our website at www.biermanlaw.com, where you can subscribe to the show so you'll never have to miss a single one. Please also follow us on Facebook and LinkedIn and subscribe to our YouTube channel. If you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating. Be sure to tune in next time for another enlightening episode.